You're listening to Beer Talk Today with your hosts Kyle Brown, Matt Lang, and John Nadler. That's right, everyone. It's Beer Talk Today. Beer Talk Today. That's Talking. Matt here with John and Kyle. How you guys doing?
Great.
Excellent. So we got a really great show lined up for everyone. Lots of exciting things. In particular, we went out to the Grumpy Troll Pub and Brewery on Saturday. Had a visit with the brewmaster, Mark the Captain, Ducow, and got to hang out and help him brew a Stein beer. And there'll be much more on that later, of course. But before we get to all that, I think we're going to do a Kyle Brown's editorial. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right, Kyle. Take it away. Wait. Oh, I'm supposed to... You didn't say to do that.
Yeah, I think we talked
think
about
we
this.
Talked you, about talked this about, you talked about a different clip. I said, what clip?
We talk about this every week.
All right. Okay, hold
There's
on.
There's many clips.
Here we go.
You'll be ready to...
Kyle Brown's editorial.
There, how's that?
Much better.
All right, good.
It's all right.
For our frequent listeners, you know of my previous rant on the Miller Lite's Triple Hops Brewed campaign. And although I did go on the air and voice my public displeasure of the false advertising, they have continued to promote the Triple Hops Brewed.
I really expected them to listen to us.
I did too, you know. So I did a little bit of market research. I just actually tonight was out and purchased a Miller Lite.
Did you?
I did.
What?
You purchased a Miller Lite?
Yeah. Well, actually, someone else purchased it for me.
Okay.
So I drank a Miller Lite that was purchased for me.
Mm.
Not triple hopped or triple hops brewed.
Well, I mean, it probably is, but what does that mean?
I don't know. But I think because of my previous editorial on this subject, Miller Lite has upped their ad campaign, and we actually have their newest ad that is aired. We'll play that for you right now.
When you're enjoying the great Pilsner taste of a Miller Lite, do you ever think about the way it's triple hops brewed? I mean, you're out there with a few friends drinking a Miller Lite. Does the fact that we add hops at three different times during the brewing instead of all at once ever cross your mind? Yeah, that's what we thought. But go ahead and enjoy that great taste anyway. Triple hops brewed Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling.
Yeah, so I don't know what they're trying to do. I think it's now a personal ad campaign.
It's a personal
against me.
Attack, I
yeah.
think.
Against you, I'm sure. Show. That makes
Come on,
sense.
Miller.
I think their plan is to be so bad that like every radio station is playing their commercials and mocking them.
It's true. This might be what they're going for.
So
I don't think our core audience is their core audience.
This brings up an important question I have for both of you. When you're drinking a Miller Lite, do you ever think about how your beer is triple hops brewed?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
I don't drink Miller Lite, nor do I think it's triple hops brewed.
So
but when I'm drinking in Grain Belt.
My favorite part of that whole commercial, which does not translate over the medium of radio, is they actually show a guy, when they're talking about how they add hops three separate times, they show a guy with this bucket with a big hop icon on it, and he's dumping a bunch of hops into a tank. And, you know, as we've even had people on the show, experts of beer, say they don't use hops. They use a derivative processed form of hops, which is much more efficient.
ISO alpha acid extracts.
Yeah, I mean, it's like saying I use maple syrup, but you're really just using, like, Old Log Cabin or Aunt Jemima. It's fake. It's processed. It's not even close. So, I don't know. I wonder how far you can go on that before it's legally just flat out lying.
Oh, I'm sure it's... I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, the guy dumping, picture him dumping a bucket of hops into the brew is kind of a little hilarious. But,
however, according to Miller Lite, hops give body, head, and take you to Happy Town.
Right.
So, direct quotes off their website.
So be there.
Yeah.
And that ends my editorial.
All right.
Thank you, Matt.
Are you in Happy Town?
Sadly, no.
No. But,
yeah. Then you should go get a triple hops Miller Lite.
I should.
That would take us to Happy Town. All right. So, like I said before, we went out to Mount Horeb and brewed a Stein beer, which you might be wondering, what does that mean? What is the significance of that? Stein beer is more of a technique than a particular style of beer. And some beer historians consider it to be among the oldest methods of brewing. It goes back to a time when wooden vessels were used as opposed to metal, making it impossible for heat to be added to the vessel by putting it over flames. So brewers instead heated stones in a fire and then dropped them into the vat to heat the liquid and produce wort. And when the rocks are superheated, in this case of the one we made with Mark out at Grumpy Troll, which are around 1,500 degrees, and dropped into the wort, they have the effect of caramelizing the sugars from the malt, kind of changing the flavor of the beer. And as a result, the beer often has caramel and toffee flavors. The type of wood used to heat the stones can also affect the flavor. In this case, Mark used oak from an old bourbon barrel he previously used to age some beer. He's made a few bourbon barrel stouts and things like that. And Stein beer is most commonly brewed in the Alpine regions of Europe, where stones were easily quarried and transported to the brewery. Once the Industrial Revolution hit, though, easier methods of heating wort were established, and by the start of 20th century, Stein beer was pretty much obsolete until a Bavarian brewery called Rauschfels started the technique back up in 1982, and this Mark alludes to this a little bit in our interview, but he couldn't remember the name. It's Rauschfels from the town of Marktoberdorf, Bavaria. Marktoberdorf. Hmm. But anyway, we were looking at all this stuff, and we were kind of thinking about using these old, ancient brewing techniques to brew beer nowadays. And this is sort of an archaic technique, but it sort of adds something different to the beer in addition to sort of having a cool story to tell. It does change the flavor and character of it a little bit. So we thought maybe we'd just talk a little bit about some other old techniques that are still being used and discuss the merits and people who are using them. The first one that came to mind was the decoction mash, which I know some people on that we've interviewed have said they don't do specifically because they think it's archaic and old-fashioned. But Rainey Moser talks about it a little bit in his book Radical Brewing, basically saying that you get certain flavors out of it that you can't get any other way, and even though it's more complicated than usually with the modern techniques that people use. Another one is lambic brewing, which you could probably talk about all day, the different weird stuff lambic brewers do. The turbid mash, spontaneous fermentation, where they don't actually pitch yeast. They just let it kind of sit open and whatever wants to float into it floats into it. And also very, very long periods of aging. And another one we thought about was, of course, something we talked about in the last show, which I know you guys have a pretty strong opinion about, the real IPA made by BrewDog, right? The first real IPA in like 200 years.
Their name is BrewDog?
Yeah, BrewDog, Scottish Brewery BrewDog.
Oh, man, that changes things.
Does that make it better?
No.
I mean, yeah, that's where they put it on a boat. One of the brewers is also a fisherman. They put it on a boat to try and replicate sending it off to India. But, I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think about sort of the merits of any of these methods? Good, bad, useless? You know, what's the point of making a Stein beer?
I think, you know, these methods, like, kind of like it is what it is. And if you can, like with the Stein beer, for example, you know, Mark is one of the very few people in the States doing this right now. And it's a spectacle and he can get people out, come watch it. He has a story to tell about the beer. It's not just another beer that was brewed in the fermenters. And it's really quite interesting to see, you know, hear like what kind of special rocks you need and to hear kind of about his previous experiences with it and the stories that go with that.
Yeah.
And I think it adds an element to the brewing side of things that people that are really into beer do want to hear about. And with decoction mashing, I mean, I believe Dan Carey was going to be doing a decoction mash.
Sure, he used that for his the Bohemian Lager, yeah, I know for sure. And he's probably done it with other lagers. I'm not positive, but.
And yeah, it's the same thing where there's a tradition behind these brewing techniques. And even though they're archaic and there might be, you know, more efficient ways to do it, I think that, you know, tradition still, like, there's still a place for it.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and with that one in particular, I think he was trying to mimic a specific style from a specific period, kind of pre-Fall of the Iron Curtain Czech Republic lager. So, yeah, I think that was part of the reason he did that, too.
I think also, you know, for Steinbier, you know, if you're brewing, if that's your job, you want to kind of mix things up.
Sure.
And, you know, you want to have fun. And that had to be the most amazing experience I've seen brewing so far, is to see these superheated rocks go suddenly into, and, you know, make a vessel that's massive boil. I mean, the sheer amount of heat that it's going and just watching it was so cool.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, I mean, sometimes it's just fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a different brew day than he's probably used to, yeah.
But what about, like, what type of flavors can you get, like, lambic?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a really old process, but I think that more than any other thing that we talk about is it's the only way to do it.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you're not going to get those flavors any other way.
Maybe
yeah,
some
really simulate.
There may be some shortcuts here and there, but it's kind of hard to just say, oh, we're going to take a natural process and... It's a hard one to mimic, you know. Time is a definite value, and location, and, you know.
Yeah, every part of it, yeah. I think that's absolutely true. And, yeah, I mean, to call, lambic brewing, I guess, is kind of a stretch to call it sort of an I mean, it is old techniques, but they never stopped doing it. So it's not like they revived something that they had ceased to do. There was at least a few breweries always that you know, never, you know, Canteon, et cetera, never stopped making beers in this fashion. But definitely. Well, I guess without any further ado, we can roll the clip. We've got an interview here with Mark Dukow, Captain, the brewmaster out at the Grumpy Troll, and talking about all sorts of beers and the setup out there. The Steinbier stuff comes sort of towards the middle and the end, but enjoy.
We're here at the Grumpy Troll with Mark the Captain, Dukow, brewmaster, brewing a Steinbier.
That's right.
Well, Mark, first question I have is, can you explain the trolls?
The trolls.
All over town.
Norwegians. They dig trolls. So, yeah, it's part of their tradition. And so, I think it's trolls are you know, Norwegian.
Okay.
The community around here is Swedish and Norwegian, a little bit of German. But yeah, if you look at, you know, on our sign, you know, welcome people in, it's Norwegian, it's welcome and
brew. Okay.
So, yeah.
And then, how did Grumpy Troll, the brewery, start out?
It started off as the Mount Orb Pub and Brewery, and it was started off by Pat and Gail Thompson back in 98. And it lasted as the Mount Orb Pub and Brewery until 2001. In 2001, it was taken over by five local businessmen, and they ran it as a Grumpy Troll until March of 2006, where Doug Welshinger bought it, and I came on in October of 2006.
Okay. So before brewing here, what is your brewing history from start to present?
How long is this show?
Short version. The fun version.
I started off at Water Street in Milwaukee. From there, I went to Gray's. From Gray's, what was Gray's? Gray's the Flatlanders in Illinois.
Okay.
In Lincolnshire. After Flatlanders, went to work that eventually became... through a partner split, it became the Delfield Brew House. I wasn't involved with that. We split off and did the Okamak Brewing Company. During Okamak Brewing Company, I came on with another partner to work here at the Montour Pump Brewery. After that closed down, went to Fitzpatrick's in Iowa City. From there, I went to Houston, Texas.
Wow, that's a big jump.
Yeah, I went to Houston, Texas, worked at a chain called a place called BJ's. From BJ's, I worked out in Los Angeles for a bit, and then North Carolina, and then came back here.
You're sort of in the Midwest for a long time, yeah, and then jumped out.
I'm a Midwestern boy.
Except for that boat in Texas?
Yeah. I was expanding my horizon.
We're glad you're back.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
So, Grumpy Troll and Brew Pub, you kind of the brewery side and then also the restaurant side. But now we're actually in the new part of the brewery. this kind of new bar.
The pizzeria. The
pizzeria. What's the story on that? It's very new.
Oh, yeah. We had this this upstairs area, the bar that we did mostly banquets in, and we were always toying around with the ideas, you know, where we're going to generate income. We finally came up and we said, we'd probably jump down to pizzeria. We jumped in, we did the pizzeria, opened it up, and you know, kind of fixed up the area. We're still working on it. It's a work in progress. But yeah, it's doing exactly what we wanted it to do. So we're generating more income and inviting people to enjoy our pizza with our beer.
Great. Do you feel that you have more of a draw that people come here for the food and get the beer, or the beer is what brings them in? In fact, and because there's food, they'll go out to dinner. And
I hope it's a beer.
should we ask Jeff the same question?
Don't. I think we got a great combination. We consider ourselves a family restaurant. We're a family restaurant that has its own brewery. And most of the people that come here are the locals that have, they're mostly young families, you know, with a couple kids, and you know, we do have a real family community feeling here. That's what we want to promote. You know, that's us. And we want to be casual, and it works great for us.
Did you see a lot of the community kind of carry over from the Mount Horeb Pub and Brewery to the Grumpy Troll?
When it came out as a Grumpy Troll, there was, let's just say when I came back, that people were excited. So,
great.
You know, when I came back, and so we got a lot of people who did come exactly from the Mount Horeb Pub and Brewery started coming back at that time when I came back. And we're just generating more people coming in and increasing our family by you know, introducing new styles of beer, just having fun with it. It's the whole idea, I think, of having a brew pub is to give people a sense of ownership and introduce them to different styles of beer and have fun that way.
Am I correct that you guys don't distribute your beer outside of the brewery, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
We do have plans. We're working on some plans.
We'll definitely talk about that later. Yeah. I would appreciate those plans to develop.
Yeah, we're looking to get in the Madison area, but we're working on that right now. Probably some bottle products.
Okay.
Like Maggie and stuff like that.
What about distribution keg-wise? Is that something you're looking into? Or?
We do offer it, but we offer it to our immediate family here, you know, our Mug Club members. We're really short with kegs. You know, our kegs just cover what we do here in-house. And we do have 6 barrels to get out, but we discourage it. Because we just don't have the capacity to handle it. Like I said, it's part of the plan.
What is the history of this building? Because there's a lot of really interesting features about this.
It was a creamery. So they made cheese here. It was one of the first cement poured buildings in the state of Wisconsin. 1916, I think, poured. And and then they poured this whole structure here. The floors are anywhere between 18 and 24 inches thick. And it was a bomb shelter for if the big one hit, you know, people in Mount Horeb would came here and probably survive it. It's incredibly sturdy and thick, and but yeah, it was a creamery, and it started off, and this building started off in 1916, and local farmers brought their milk here and turned it into cheese, and it was owned by I think the Risers, and a lot of people had. It stayed operational until 85, and a lot of people come in here that used to work here, and they're like, yeah, I used to make cheese over there. Yeah, and then there's a
there's a lot of people that still in town that used to work here. Maybe even there was the Lehner brothers, Pete and Willie. Willie's actually a cheese master that works here. He's got the Blue Mound cheese little plug for him.
Oh, sure.
He does incredible cheeses and wins awards, you know, worldwide for his cheeses.
All right. Well, I guess I'm going to ask you about some of the beers.
Yes.
And I'd like to add that I think Grumpy Troll is the only brewery that's been all thumbs up. For Brewpub, that's been all thumbs up on Beer Talk today. So,
thank you.
I'm just going to ask you about some of the beers that we've had on the show. But first of all, I'd like to start by asking you about the Growler Cozy.
The Growler Cozy.
How did this come about?
I got a salesman come by at 8, so we had a lot of, you know, we have a lot of growler sales before we all take a beer out. And we'd always, you know, I was worried about, you know, people, you know, getting warm beer, you know, like a picnic or something, or taking it home. And so, and this salesman, he had this, he was trying to sell me stuff. I said, well, what about, I drew him a picture of a Growler Cozy. I said, can you get me one of these? I said, if you get me one of these, then I'll buy it from him. And he did some research, and he came back with this Growler Cozy, and I'm like, they actually make these things? so we did it, and it works great for us.
That's great.
Single cozy. It's pretty nice.
I mean, I've never seen anyone else with one, so I figured there had to be some story behind that.
Yeah.
The first beer, I guess, the Belgian IPA, we reviewed it. It was one of the last beer reviews we did. We all really liked it. Why don't you tell us about that one?
That was inspired by the shoot. I was actually at a friend's house and having pizza. And he makes this Vidalia onion pizza that's awesome. And he says, you got to try this new beer, you know. You've seen the name on it. It's like Double and Imperial, you know, goes on.
Coupe du Blanc, something,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Then it finishes off with IPA or something. So, you know, I'm trying it. I'm like, this is incredible. You've got the expressive yeast and, you know, the phenolics and all that. Mixes together great with the hops. And I'm like, I got to make one of these. So I did a little research and it came about from that.
Great.
It seems a little different though, if my memory is correct, the hop goblin one, the shoot one seemed to have a lot of like kind of citrus hops.
Exactly, yeah.
And yours seemed
yeah.
to be a little bit more of like a continental hop flavor. What made you decide to go with that?
What I did with this one, I did mostly noble hops.
Mm-hmm.
The beer from Belgium is made with Amarillo, which is very expressive, very, very grapefruit and citrus and a little bit of tangerine in there. It's very nice. I kind of switch it around, you know, just play around with stuff. And possibly, again, I'm gonna probably, if I get my hops from the hop farm, I'll probably be using those for aromatics.